Yep, I'm bringing that back. Hello and welcome to the Taskmaster podcast. My name is Ed Gamble. I am nearing ever closer to no longer being the Taskmaster champion because it's episode 9 of Taskmaster series 10. That's right, episode 9. I'm sure you've watched all the episodes up until this point, episodes 1 through 9. I'm not going to talk down to you and tell you that if you haven't, you shouldn't be listening to this because there'll be spoilers. Of course you've watched it. You are not stupid. There's no way that you'd listen ahead unless you've seen the episode because you know that there's going to be spoilers because we will be discussing the down low, the dirty, the dog's dumps. I'm not good at podcast intros. I really need to write down what I say in advance. Apologies. We're going to talk about everything is essentially what I'm saying. So go away, watch the episode. I'm sure you all watch Taskmaster. It's 9 p.m. Channel 4, Thursdays. Or, you know, if you're a family-friendly kind of person, why not watch it on E4 at 6 p.m? That's when all the horrible, rude things are taken out. There's a lot of rude things. Very sexy episode this week, actually. Real full-on stuff. So definitely watch it on E4 at 6 p.m. if you're not into that sort of rude business. So it wasn't a sexy episode at all. It was a lot of fun, though. This week, we will be chatting through the episode with the wonderful Katie Wicks from Series 9 of Taskmaster, the same series that I was on. She's absolutely brilliant, Katie. Absolutely hilarious. Looking forward to chatting to her about this episode, sure, but also about her time on Taskmaster and also answering some of your emails. If you want to email in with a question for me and my special guest next week, why not do it? Taskmasterpodcast@gmail.com, and we will read the questions to them. But for now, why not go and get some gifts from taskmasterstore.com or go onto the Taskmaster YouTube channel, youtube.com/taskmaster, for all of your Taskmaster content. Let's crack on. That is the admin done. Let's have a chat to Katie Wicks on the Taskmaster podcast. Welcome, Katie, to the Taskmaster podcast. Thank you very much for coming on.
Hi, Ed. My absolute pleasure and honour.
Thank you very much for coming on the podcast. Obviously, we were on the same series, so it's lovely to catch up, and it's lovely to have a chat about this current series. Tell me, did you enjoy your time on Taskmaster Series 9?
Oh God, we're straight in with the big question.
It's the big question at the top.
I mean, yes, obviously, I loved it. It's like, it was my dream for so many years, decades. And I've never known a show which has got so much kind of jealousy from other comedians when I said I was doing it. Someone I know like walked out the room because they were so cross. Someone we both know. Which I didn't take to me, you know, it wasn't like they were saying, why you? But I think they were just like, why not me? I feel like it's a huge honour. I was weirdly nervous for that very reason, because I feel like all our peers watch it and there's nowhere to hide. It feels so kind of exposing that I felt more nervous on day one than I would do just walking into any old set, you know, where someone gives you some lines to say. But I loved it. I had a turbulent one, as you know.
Yes.
Things happened to me. And that wasn't ideal, but you know, I apart from that, it was a dream. I wish I could have done it again on less painkillers, I guess, because I was ill, I should say.
I'm sure we'll come to that throughout the discussion. Yeah. I'm pretty sure we've got some email Save it for Act 3. The jealousy thing is very interesting from other comedians, because yeah, you do feel that, and I know that other comedians are jealous of the people who do the show, because I was one of those comedians until I got to do it. And I don't know whether that makes me feel good or bad. I think it's part of the reason I enjoyed doing the show, that I knew loads of other comedians were seething.
Yeah, I agree. That always spurs me on. It's a good energy, that. Yeah, I just felt it honestly felt like a real privilege for that reason, because just all the people I've loved have done it. And I just felt this real pressure to come up with something original each time. I loved it. I think I loved just doing the tasks more than the studio, maybe, because, you know, I've done panel shows in the past and I've enjoyed them, but what's really nice is actually having a thing to do and focus on. So you're not just sort of sat trying to kind of interject in the conversation. There were times when I wish Alex had kind of left me alone and there'd been no cameras there, because I just was so into just doing the doing of it.
Yeah.
That there were times where I just was like, Alex, stop, you know, talking to me. I'm trying to do this thing. And but I think that's the only way to approach it, isn't it? To be, to get involved and to not sort of think of it as the cameras are on and you have to...
Can you think of any particular tasks where you were so into the process of it that you wanted Alex to leave you alone? Because I know that you were always quite keen on the more art-based ones.
Yeah, so things like the making of Mount Rushmore, I got really into that and could quite happily have gone another sort of 2 hours. And just there were times where I'd be like, Alex, I'm thinking, just shut up. He'd be asking me these questions like, do you want me to get you with this ping pong? And I'd be like, I'm just thinking. But yeah, I the whole thing was, it was really amazing. I feel really lucky that we were in the group that we were. I really do.
It was a really good group. And our team, of course, me, you and Rose were on a team for team tasks. I think one of my favourite days, we've already had Rose Matafeo on the podcast, but the Buckaroo, recreating Buckaroo while I was the donkey and you two improvised as two cowboys.
It's
the most I've laughed
in
ages.
It is like a weird dream now that you tell me that actually has happened in my life. Yeah.
Angry eyes. Y'all gone fishing. God, here comes the wine rack. Watch your ears.
A wooden spoon.
A horse on a donkey.
A horse next to a violin.
You guys were really, really... When the first time you both appeared over the horizon, over the horizon of the caravan... And what I remember thinking was like, oh, these guys have this like puppyish kind of gusto and they're attacking this with the right energy. And it was good because it made me more like, I felt like up until then I'd been a bit introverted and I kept sort of giving myself these talks of like, this is an amazing opportunity. You've got to go back out there and like just do something really wild.
But I saw the way you approached it and I thought maybe I should be doing it more like that, because you were calmer and you were processing things and you were thinking about things before you did them. Whereas I just, like you say, just rush into them like a madman.
I think that makes better telly.
Maybe, but I think, like you say about trying to come up with the most original, interesting thing to do in every task, sometimes I think I missed the mark there because I just did the first thing that popped into my head. Went into it like a crazy person. So,
I think I did that too, because you have no choice. That's the other thing, isn't it? Is that you have no time to go with your second choice. You have to sort of go with the first. And it's usually the best. It's usually the best one.
Can you think of any particular highlights, task-wise, or something that you made during Taskmaster that you think, yes, that's the best thing I did?
I think my red teapot I'm incredibly proud of.
Yes.
It's on the shelf. I'm looking at it now. That felt pretty inspired. That felt like it could be in some surrealist gallery in Berlin or something.
I think that was episode one as well? It was the prize task in episode one,
yeah,
maybe.
It was early on. I set a precedent, right?
It was amazing. It's the most stressful thing. And you have a teapot with... Has it got two spouts?
It's the handle and the spout are on the same side.
That's it, yeah. I thought that was amazing. I thought, oh no, I'm in trouble here. Someone's come out all guns blazing.
And it was downhill after that.
I know that quite often during the prize tasks, you and Rose would have a go at Greg for only liking things if they were dick-based.
Like phallic things, yeah. And then I really embraced it by bringing in that big wooden penis, which is, oh, put it away. I know why I put it away, because my accountant came round.
So the wooden penis, which Was that, what was the story behind that? That you, was it your friend's dad had made it or something?
Yeah, it was my friend's dad imported them. I don't know if they went back out of the house, but they got imported into the house. Oh my God.
You've surely got to send some of them out of the house. You can't just import a load of wooden dicks and then just keep and hoard them.
I think, what I probably didn't say in the show, in fairness, I think they are like a fertility symbol from a culture that I can't remember. So, you know, we shouldn't be too disparaging.
Yeah. No, and I'm sure they work perfectly well within that culture. But once you bring them into another one, they sort of take on a different meaning, right?
Once you're like in a garage in Swansea and you're looking like face to face with a penis, you're looking face to face with a penis face. It's a different story.
Can you remember any, I mean, I'm going to say low moments of the series. Of course, you were ill for two episodes, so that would probably... But when you were there, task-wise, can you think of any sort of any low moments where you thought, oh, that's a bit disappointing?
I didn't enjoy the steamroller at all because I've never driven a car. I've never driven anything. And I'm definitely in the minority. So when someone says to me, I'll get on this thing, it's not a car, but you're definitely driving it. I'm like, but I don't even... I was just really sort of panicked that I was going to kill someone because I have no, you've never sort of had to steer anything. Yeah. And it was fine. It was just switch it on and go. But I felt really like tense. I felt worried for everyone else. It was like my ego. It was like I felt ashamed of how panicked I was. And I had like the voices of viewers in my head being like, what the fuck's wrong with her? It's just a steamroller. I felt like I was just... like, as long as I don't make a complete tit of myself, everything else is just sort of fine. I think I just thought, as long as I'm sort of in the middle, I'm not going to be the best. I'm not going to be the worst. Just as long as I don't stand out as this kind of complete idiot, then I'll be okay.
I sort of approached it in a different way, in that if I felt like something was going fine or wasn't going well, I would think, well, let's be spectacularly the worst.
Yeah, yeah. How much did you want to win?
Oh yeah, I wanted to win, and I think that was pretty clear. I think I feel like me and Rose were clearly trying to win. Which, I mean, apologies. It must have been.
Oh, I wanted to win.
Yeah, but you. I think you kept it quieter that you wanted to win.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you were less sort of desperate. I think me and Rose came across as quite desperate.
Well, actually, it wasn't until, like, there was a point where I was quite far ahead. Like, there was a point where it looked like I could win.
Yes.
And as soon as I realised that, I thought, fucking hell, like, I've been ill. Just let me win. Please, universe. Does life change if you win? Like, does it make a difference? Isn't it the taking part?
I'd say my life is exactly the same. I don't think my life has changed, apart from occasionally people will remind you that no one ever remembers who wins anyway. That's what they like to do.
Someone said, this is really mean, I'm going to say it because I think you can handle it. I'm sorry, this is the wrong thing to say. Somebody said to me, I think it's quite cringe to win. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but I do agree.
It's really funny.
If you look at the Hall of Fame of the winners, it's, I mean, me, totally desperate to win. Lou won, but I think gets away with it because she won completely within her vibe.
I'm so glad she won.
And Kerry, obviously within her vibe as well, but just absolute desperation and chaos. And I suppose Lisa Tarbuck was pretty chill about it. So no, I'd say it's every so often it is cringe to win, and I'm one of those. Thank you. So, hot takes on this series, Katie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
How are you feeling about this lineup?
I think it's an amazing group. I was really, really excited, particularly excited about Johnny Vegas, who I've always loved. He's such a genius. I was really relieved for Richard in a way because he's been talking about it, wanting to do it for years and years and years, is the sense I get.
Bit cringe, really. Bit cringe.
When I listen to some of his episodes of his podcast, I feel like he really, really wanted to do it for so long. So I'm really pleased for him. It was a really exciting group. Yeah, I couldn't wait to see it. And it's delivered. I thought EP9 was amazing.
It's a really good episode. It is, I think, possibly the most stressful episode of Taskmaster ever in terms of the lineup of tasks. I think I would have lost it on every single one. We'll come to those anyway. Let's start off with the prize task, which is the best bedding.
It's classic TM category, I'd say. Mm-hmm. I thought Johnny Vegas's bedding story was delightful and so moving. I loved it so much.
And I bought it as well. Greg decided that Johnny was just making that up on the spot, or he'd come up with it that morning. I didn't think that at all.
I think it has a grain of truth. Yeah, definitely. I think at some point he's definitely put lamb's wool out for a bird.
Yeah,
for sure.
He's delightful. He's such a precious, lovely man. That's what I get from him. Yeah. And I want to wrap him in lamb's wool.
It's interesting, isn't it? Like, I think older comedians, they really go one of two ways. They either, like, the sort of Bob Mortimer, Johnny Vegas, get very kind of like sort of soft and more vulnerable, or they get really bitter, like,
yeah,
blank out the name. They get really like bitter and feel like younger comedians represent their own sort of self-destruction and death. So it's good to see he's gone that way. He's kind of softened.
No, and it's lovely. And he's lovely in the studio as well. He really laughs at other people's stuff, which is very important as well, I think.
For some reason, I really imagine him and Daisy have this amazing friendship now. I just really project that onto them when I'm watching them. I really think they must get on.
Well, they do. Yeah, I think they seem to have a lovely chemistry, right?
Yeah,
they sort of fit together quite nicely. No, I loved the lamb's wool. I was a big fan of the lamb's wool. I actually think it was underscored.
I think that, if I'm honest, like, it's really hard to beat Daisy's one of just like clean, fresh bedding is the best. And we all know that. That's really hard to beat.
It's not a showy prize, though, is it? I think if you're coming up against, like, so Richard did the Greg and Alex bedding, which is just typical. I think he's so out there to win.
I felt it was funny. I think it was a tiny bit, I'm going to say obvious, because I feel like when the task is, you know, a specific object, I feel like there's always the option of, I'll go and get X put on the object.
Yeah.
I feel like that's always an option that I always would try and not do.
Okay, yeah. Catherine went with silk sheets.
In our
house, we have a catchphrase for every time Catherine does anything. We just go, oh, mummy, because she's just like a lovely mummy. And when she said a silk sheet, that was a classic old mummy moment.
It was quite like 50s Hollywood.
Yeah.
It made me laugh because I have silk sheets. I like that it was seen as this luxury, unattainable item. I have silk sheets. I forget to use them because they're kind of the pain. They don't really stay on. But I do have, they slip about. And you slip about in the bed because of them. But I do have a silk pillowcase because it's meant to help with the old, like, you know, you wake up with less, like, wrinkles.
Yeah.
It doesn't work. I mean, I look young as fuck, but it doesn't work. part of me went, oh yeah, I've got to get my silk sheets out of the cupboard.
That's the most bougie luxury thing you could possibly... Because that reminded me that I've got to get my silk sheets out.
Yeah, that was my reaction, sadly.
I had the same thing with the Greg and Alex bedding. It reminded me to get that out of the cupboard.
When I saw that, it took me a while to work out that it was kind of like, here's a template of two men, and then you provide the face. It really did look like, where's this photo? Like, I can't imagine Alex Horn even putting one arm up behind his head like that. Like,
no,
I've never seen him do that.
I've never seen him pose in any way whatsoever. No, he's just stood there all the time.
I've never seen him move his upper body independently of his lower body. He is the most standy person I've ever met.
He is. He's a little wooden man.
Oh my god, he's like a figurine.
So Mawan went with the weird travel pillow, the ostrich pillow
where you put
your head and hands in it. Do we believe that he actually travels with that? Because Johnny was underscored because Greg didn't believe the lamb's wool thing. But I don't believe that Mawan has ever used that pillow while he's been travelling.
Well, two things. My first thought was, oh, Tash Dimitri's got one of those.
Right.
That was my first, my first thought. So then it didn't seem mad that he would have one. Maybe like they were at a gig together and she was like, have you seen this? And I think she probably bought it as a funny prop, but I have tried it on and it is incredibly comfortable. I mean, it's a little bit anxiety inducing, and that you know, if you're in public and you've got that on, anything could be like, you know, anything could be happening.
Yeah. I was thinking, because if you have that on a train or something or on a plane, like I wouldn't like to be cut off from the general public.
No, it's like, I think if you're on your own, the plane could have crashed and you'd still be there kind of in the ostrich head going, guys. So but they are very comfortable. I mean, I can't, it's hard to imagine him actually wearing that on sort of, on the sort of London buses.
Totally, yeah.
I believe he owns it, though. Or, you know, he Googled, like, funniest pillow, and that came up. Because
there is an
Googled
element of that.
Funniest.
Yeah, who hasn't Googled funniest thing coming up the prize task?
I did exactly. So many times. Funniest long thin thing. Funniest pebble.
Task one, make the biggest beer mat house on this table making your biggest beer mat house. Ring the doorbell after exactly 1 minute, then after exactly 58 seconds, 56 seconds, and so on until 0 seconds. Biggest beer mat house wins. If you make more than two mistakes with timing, you are disqualified. Your time ends when you press the doorbell for the final time. Stressful. So I would have lost my mind doing this.
Oh, yeah. Loved it. I think getting the doorbell was so inspired.
Oh, yeah, let's away kick off with that. Moan absolutely nailed it. I didn't see it coming. I didn't think about it.
No. Why the episode wasn't called Blood on the Doorbell, I don't know, because I was kind of obsessed with that shot. I loved so much about it. I love the fact that, of course, Johnny Vegas is good at this. Like, it just feels like the kind of thing he would have done like in the 90s in pubs. Yeah. that made so much sense to me. It was so tragic when it fell apart. And Catherine made a comment really quietly under her breath about in the studio where she said, you even use cement. And she meant like the saliva to hold it together, which is such a sweet thing to say. Getting the doorbell was incredible. And I was really kind of torturing myself of like, but would I have thought of that? Honestly, can I honestly say I would have thought to get the doorbell?
Yeah.
Probably not, because you look at the house and you don't think, oh, that doorbell comes off.
No, like, I'd never think to take a doorbell off the wall. I tell you what I did think, though, and this is the way I think. And I think, oh, I've nailed it. I've thought laterally. I thought, take the whole table outside.
The whole wall off.
take the whole table outside. And
turn the house inside out.
Make the house outside. Next to the doorbell.
Smart.
It is kind of smart, but it's basically a version of what Moan did, but a much more clunky and annoying version, because I would have pushed a table outside. But I thought of taking the thing to the thing just the wrong way around.
See, my mind immediately went to construction of the fastest, best house made out of beer mats. And I got really into that and think the tower method was good. I wouldn't say it was a house. It was more like maybe a skyscraper or a building. But the lighthouse, it was beautiful.
The lighthouse, or as Catherine thought it was, a windmill.
Yeah, it's funny. What I loved about the rotating light was this sort of fuck you of look how much extra time I had, you know.
Yeah.
Because of the doorbell to make, you know, to do this like flourish on the top.
Greg said everyone else in the studio just like gasped when he brought the doorbell in. But it's so frustrating to not see things like that. So Richard cut himself.
Oh, it's funny.
He managed to injure himself during a task. I think it somehow managed to do a paper cut on quite a thick cardboard mat.
that was beautiful. He also, I felt slightly like, oh God, I feel like I'm being really mean to him this whole episode. I felt like
that's normal for the podcast, by the way. We always lay in on Richard. Yeah, he listens to it as well. So really,
oh,
go
no,
for it.
Don't tell me that. Because I would have done the same thing. I felt like he showed Alex in this like when you're in the playground and you show a teacher. And I felt maybe there was an element of like he was expecting everything to stop. Like, right, something's gone wrong. Richard's cut himself. We have to stop the task. It felt like there was gonna be some sort of like repercussion of him. What I loved was the rendering of the houses. That was a really nice touch.
It was a lovely
The architectured
touch.
Sort of drawings. That was a really nice touch. It felt like it was real sort of piss take.
Yeah. It had a sort of bake-off vibe to it, but none of the actual cakes went right. I mean, Daisy showing again that she is very competitive, and if she's decided that something's good and you say it's not good, she gets genuinely angry. Like, she thought that house was good.
Yeah, she pulls a lot of good faces.
She does.
Like, readable.
When Greg says, well, what's the hole in the middle for? And she says, well, it's living space. You can tell she's
that was great.
Genuinely angry about that. But Mwan, quite rightly, gets the 5 points there. I think thinking outside the box, bringing the doorbell in, and then managing to pull off having the lighthouse.
What I loved was how relaxed he was. The doorbell was just there. He just sort of occasionally pressed it. It was like the Queen's Gambit. Pressing the thing. Pressing the clock.
Poor Johnny, so desperate. But I think Greg's got to stick to his guns. I think Greg gets it in the neck if he doesn't mark properly. And Johnny was disqualified there, so he probably didn't deserve a bonus point just for trying hard.
I think he did deserve a bonus point.
You do, okay.
I do. Because I think it was really impressive what he did. It was like three stories.
But then it fell apart and he didn't do the timings properly.
But I think it fell apart because of the wafting of the door every time he went out, which, you know, isn't his fault.
I'd say the wafting is his fault because he's doing the wafting, isn't he? If you go out the door, you should have taken the waftage into account.
But if you've got a few seconds to get to the doorbell, I don't think you're thinking, I better not waft the door because I'm up to three stories on my house of cards. I wish for him that the task had just been build the house and none of the doorbell stuff.
Yeah, because you would have just liked to have seen him have the time and just build a beautiful house.
I would have liked to have seen him have some peanuts, a pint, and then just get on with building the house.
You just want to go to the pub
in
with Johnny Vegas, right?
Yeah, basically. But a pub in the 90s when you could smoke, etc.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it was 0 points for Johnny, naught points for Catherine. Daisy got 4 points, amazingly, for something that was just a pile of beer mats with a tiny living space in the middle.
That was pretty good going. Yeah, for what it was.
Yeah, for what it was. And Richard got 3 points, and he was a very brave boy.
Yeah. I've lost many a bar, Joe. Just standing there licking beer mats. I once repaired a bicycle puncture with my spittle. It's amazingly strong.
So, task two. Again, stressful. Complete the most tasks. There is one task behind each door. You may choose the order you open the doors. They get more and more complicated, the tasks, don't they? You may only move when the doors are moving. You must stay behind the line. During the task, you must tell Alex what door to open within 1 minute of the previous door closing. How do you feel about this one, Katie? Would you have enjoyed doing this one?
My first thought was I would have been so shit at this. I would have been so shit. It's sort of like when, you know, it sort of reminded me of when, like, the gimmicky end of Sports Day. It was like, ugh, beanbags in a bucket kind of vibe.
Would you have been bad at it because you, I mean, immediately you're showing disdain for the task. Would you have been like, oh, no, I'm not doing this. This is a pain in the ass. Or is it one of those ones where you need that puppyish enthusiasm that you described that me and Rose had?
I mean, I would have tried for sure. I guess it's like, it's just, I think when it's a speed thing, I just kind of, I always think, it's like my thinking is so self-defeating because I just think, well, I'm not going to be the fastest. What's the point? It's just like, I know my limitations. But I mean, I would have had a good go. I would have hoped that I would have done it in the same order as Daisy did it. That was pretty good. I mean, I was thinking stupid things like, well, what sort of shoes does Catherine have on? I can't remember, but, you know, like, they're probably like laced up boots to the knee or something is what I was thinking. I got really into, you know, the stupid details you think about. And I was like, oh, my shoes would have been very quick to take off. Okay, I would have been okay with that. And
But that's the thing, yeah, you could have been, you know, people were screwed over by shoes that they picked months before. So Johnny was wearing, you know, lace-up quite hard brogues. I mean, to the point that I think he didn't take his shoes off. He put his shoes in the bucket by putting both his feet in the bucket without taking them off.
Yeah, that was inspired. It was really funny how bad everyone was at kicking, as I would have been. But it's quite hard to get like a little flimsy little plastic thing like that. That was funny. But also, what was funny was... like at one point, Johnny like kicked the ball the other way, just like out of frustration, when he couldn't get it in the thing. He just kind of, the garage door closed and he just sort of kicked it anyway, just somewhere else.
Just out of sheer anger.
Yeah, it made me laugh.
I would have been so, I would have been so stressed at this one. I think, but this is one where you need to throw yourself into it, which was even more surprising that Daisy managed to do it quite methodically, because that's not normally her vibe necessarily, but she thought about taking the bucket with her to each door, which was
taking
clever.
The bucket was really smart. Yeah, I had total admiration for that. And again, I think in the moment, in the sort of panic, and the only time I feel like I haven't done a task well, it's usually when I've been distracted by my sort of thinking, like overthinking, and so in some ways you've got to be so zen and so blank and also think at the same time.
Yeah, it's really hard. It's really hard. And a lot of people panicked on this task. I mean,
it was hard not to panic on something like that. It was really well done. It was like really well thought through. And Alex standing there closing the doors. It was really funny, like he ran a garage. Oh, God.
Something to take away from this task is, I think Johnny Vegas with a mouthful of banana sounds more like Johnny Vegas than when he doesn't have a mouthful of banana.
Oh yeah, that was a revelation, how everyone sounds with a banana in their mouth. I was obsessed with that. That was a highlight. Thank you for reminding me of that. I loved that. Daisy eating that banana was incredible.
Yeah, just straight down. Absolutely.
And also what Greg said, it's so true about like, you put a chocolate orange in any situation, everyone's like, ooh.
I never thought I'd see a chocolate orange smash against the corrugated iron door, but it was quite beautiful, wasn't it? The way it all came out of the packet and segmented against the door. It was wonderful.
Yeah, I loved it. But also just the speed at which people managed to actually get like the flesh out of the orange was quite incredible. Yeah. Tearing an orange in half, basically.
Daisy got the full 5 points, which is well deserved. I think she approached it in the right way. 4 points for Richard, 3 points for Johnny, 2 points for Mawan, and 1 point for Catherine.
Yeah, very good. Some definite technique there. And nice to have it confirmed that she eats like a psychotic tiger.
So let's move on to task three. Guess how many balls are in the basket? A seemingly quite easy task, and it was the first task they did, which they mentioned. But obviously something deceptive was going on. There were different sized balls within the basket. There was some ball bearings. I think this is tricky, very stressful. I don't see how it's possible to find out the smaller balls and get them all back in the basket. I think it's an impossible task.
Yeah, another really stressful one. I don't know what I would have done. I really don't.
Especially day one. I think that's what it showed, that it was day one and quite a few of them were a little bit timid. They were just counting and then coming up with a guess. A tricky one to do first off, because I'd come out of that thinking, oh, I've not done that very well. I've not done that in a funny way.
I wasn't sure what the rules were. So you could go, because part of me thought, well, I would have maybe got like gone and got loads of black bags. Mm-hmm. And like,
oh,
tried
of course,
count them and put them in so that I could like immediately like empty them back in really, really quickly.
Yeah.
But that doesn't help with the stupid ball bearings.
But also, if you put them in black bags, then you just put the black bags back into the thing. Because what was stressing me out was, if you take them all out, there's all those small balls that are in the box. If you then try and put the small balls back into the cage, they're all going to fall out the bottom. That was really stressing me out, imagining that happening.
Right, yeah. So that was my smartest thought, was something to do with black bags.
Very smart.
It was 4 minutes. I don't know, part of me thought, I would have just sat there and counted them really intensely like a moron. And then at like you know, 3 minutes 58 would have just like guesstimated the rest. Bang. Yeah. I think I just would have done that.
I think that's so a good sort of that's a good way of doing it.
Obedient.
No, but that's a good way of doing it. It's better than doing what a few people did, which was trying to count them while they were still in the box, because obviously then you don't see the different sizes.
Yeah, it was what was really sweet, was trying to imagine the maths that they were like attempting in their head. Like trying to, I really wish I could have seen people's workings of like, okay, well, there's this many by this many times, you know, like. I
wouldn't have tried that. I think I would have taken some out, but I think I would have got very frustrated. It was lovely to see Daisy start her Taskmaster journey. So we know that's her first task, and she puts them in a baking tray.
That was so painful to watch because it's just not holding that many. It was so sort of like pointless, like skimming the top.
But it was quite methodical, and I could see she was trying to stay calm. It was her first task. She was like, okay, here we go. We're starting to do Taskmaster. And then she dropped one of them. And she went, oh, fucking hell. I was like, okay, there she, straight away. She's let it slip immediately, day one.
Day one, that would have been tough one to face on day one.
But poor Johnny, two tasks in this episode that he's got close and probably deserved a bonus point because he guessed 1,100. He was 92 balls off.
That was astonishing. I wouldn't have guessed that many if I'd just decided to guess and leave the room. I would have been clueless. That was, and it is funny how invested you are. Like you do genuinely feel really affected when you've done really badly. Like it does really affect you for like the next sort of hour. And it's not until you've done one that you think you've done well that you feel better about yourself. It really is. Your self-esteem is really dependent on.
And you never really know how you've done until the studio. Were there any that you thought you'd absolutely nailed, and then when we got into the studio, you against everyone else or the way Greg reacted to it, you're like, oh, that's not as good as I thought it was?
The water feature one, with the ceramic pig.
Yeah.
I remember thinking, well, you know, someone would kind of have that in their garden. It's like a standalone, genuine water feature. And then when I saw the Alex Mermaid monstrosity that you created, I was like, oh, that's so much more fun, you know, like why didn't I just do something more kind of like outrageous?
But you were going for something that you could recreate as a commercially available water feature.
And then I think with things like actually Mount Rushmore, I remember thinking really arrogantly, like, you won't get better than this. And then I think Rose did an incredible one carved out like Mr. Potato Heads, which was, I thought was like incredible. I think that should have, I can't remember if it won or not, but anyway. And the other one I thought I'd done really well at, there was one that wasn't shown that I was really disappointed in, which was something like use one piece of fruit to make it look like another piece of fruit.
Yeah, you had to basically disguise a piece of fruit, right, as another piece of fruit. Yeah.
And I spray painted a couple of oranges to make them look like grapes. And then found this other big thing in the house and put it next to it so it looked like for a sense of scale, and then put it on a tablecloth anyway. And then I just went on and on and on. I think it was a cheese board next to it at one point, but I've got so into it. I've still got photos of it on my phone, so I've got the memories.
So let's move on to the studio tasks. Did you enjoy doing the studio tasks?
Yeah, I loved them. Yeah, I really loved them. I've got really fond memories of the saying whether there was a horse or a...
A horse or laminator.
Yes, I loved that one. I loved the one where we had to draw on each other's backs. Do you remember that?
Yes, I mean, that all unspooled because I was on a team with David Baddiel. You guys were pretty good at that.
Drawing yourself on a thing. I think a lot of I liked them because a lot of them were drawing, so I always liked them.
All of the, I've mentioned this already. I mean, your art tasks were pretty incredible, and we did have a lot of drawing ones in the studio. So we had the back ones; they were incredible. And drawing on the faces and the longest snake, we had to draw the snake thing.
I don't think I won the snake though, because I didn't have any stripes or I didn't have a tongue or something. I don't know.
And also you're drawing a famous couple on the knees or elbows, I remember, being a particular standout.
Yeah, well, I remember the Frida Kahlo was very successful, and the Diego was a bit shonky. But I do what I do remember about that episode was they showed a picture of it, and I remember saying, "Have we got another picture of it?" Because I don't think that picture's doing it justice of how good it was. But then they showed it from another angle, and I was like, "Yeah, that's a better angle." And so I don't know if that's you're allowed to say.
See, that sums up how much you did want to win, but in quite a sort of in a way that you're trying to disguise it, just being like, show another angle of that.
Time. Sure, guys, have we got another shot of this?
I remember being so worried that you were really slagging me off quietly during the studio, you say something in the studio but couldn't quite make out what it was. And I thought, she's speaking directly into the microphone, so it's picked up in the edit. And I thought she's just destroying me.
It's so stupid looking back because I don't do many panel shows and stuff like that. And because I haven't really done stand-up for years and years, I feel like I'm so out of practice of sort of coming up with funny things to say in the moment that I feel like I sort of thought, I talked to Lolly, she said the same thing. I said, I'll say the thing that's in my head, but I'll just say it like really quietly. Therefore, if no one laughs, no one's heard it. And if someone hears, but then they sort of said to me, oh, we turn up in the edit, we turn up the things you say because we found these little gems and we started turning them up. But weirdly, Lolly said that she would do the same thing, that she would just like say it to the person next to her like it wasn't TV. Like, I'll just try this out on Rose and then I'll say it to the audience.
you had my favourite quip in the studio, which was making Alex nod if he was being bullied, saying, "Nod if you're being bullied," and then he nodded and then you went, why are you telling me?
Oh my God, I absolutely love that.
I think about that all the time. So this
I've forgotten about that. That's really funny. Not if you're being bullied. Oh.
This studio task is another drawing on draw the monster that the taskmaster is going to describe. Most accurate drawing wins. You have 2 minutes from when the taskmaster starts talking. Again, quite stressful, but I think you would have been very good at this, Katie.
I loved it. I was so jealous. I actually drew along at home.
Did you?
Yeah, I can show you.
Yes, please. Oh, I love it. Oh, it's brilliant.
I mean,
you definitely need to take a photo of that, and we'll tweet it out when we release the episode. That's awesome.
I mean, I did all right. I got quite a lot of them. The cold, representing cold to me is the hardest bit of this.
Yes.
Yeah, how do you represent cold? I did like wavy lines, like there was sort of, you know, the northeast wind was blowing.
It's difficult with wavy lines, though, isn't it? Because that often represents stink as well. Yeah.
What did you say? Stink?
Stink, yes.
I put it sting. Yeah.
For me, whenever also, I put wavy lines, it represents sting.
Also, my monster's got breasts because at one point he sort of said it's female, apropos of nothing, and it's a bit very binary, but I gave it breasts.
The thing is about this, it was how many characteristics you got on, not necessarily how well you did the drawing. So yeah. Richard won because he got 14 characteristics on, but his wasn't the best drawing.
Yeah, won because of good admin, basically. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
rather
exactly.
than artistry. It was a pedantic win.
Daisy was quite methodical and wrote a list first, which is not something I would have thought to have done.
Yeah, I couldn't work out whether that was a good idea or not. I feel as though that would have taken more, like writing takes more time than drawing in my head. That would have taken more time, I think. And then the writing would have been slightly illegible. But
what were you going to say about Moans?
Oh, the big maple leaf. That was really funny that he said he'd tried to draw something that was less Canadian looking. It was just so unexpected, like a big leaf. It was really great. I really loved it.
It's a great Taskmaster task because at no point in any other TV show has anyone done a drawing like that. It's only in that moment that things like that have come out.
Yeah, yeah. But that's what I love about this show is I feel as though it's like where else would you kind of get away with these very surrealist things that, you know, would somehow be alienating, but it's like they creep in. What starts off as something that seems so logical, people are just kind of doing this thing, and then you end up drawing a kind of leaf monster with six eyes. Like, I love that Catherine Parkinson had one extra eye. Just like, why did she waste time drawing a seventh eye? Oh, mummy.
She has two eyes and two more eyes. And one leg and a huge tusk that looks like a tree.
What's a tusk?
Fuck off, I'm not telling you.
That is cold.
It's a competition. And I'm losing.
But she got 3 points at least, because it's not been a good points show for her. Daisy also got 3 points. 4 points for Johnny and Mwan, and 5 points for Richard. He got in 14 characteristics. Well done, Richard, which won him the episode narrowly over Daisy, the 21 points and 20 points respectively. 18 points for Mwan, 6 points for Catherine, unfortunately, 9 points for Johnny. So Richard wins this episode, which puts him out in front in the series with 145 points, but only 2 points ahead of Daisy. It seems like a race between those two now, with only one episode to go. Do you have any predictions for a winner?
It's hard, isn't it, to choose between those two. I think it might be Richard.
You think Richard? He wants it. I think Daisy wants it as well. So I think this is the right two to be out in front. Obviously, Mwan... Yeah. Mwan or Johnny could still do it. There's 134 points and 130 points for Johnny. Mwan's on 134. But it feels like Daisy and Richard have got the bit between their teeth now. And now it's time to hear from our BFF bonus fact finder, Alex Horn.
Hello everyone, it's Alex Horn here, your BFF bonus fact finder. But today, I am your BFF, your bonus facts finder. Yes, two facts today. Strap in. Okay, the first fact is about the bin of balls task, where they had to work out or guess how many balls were in the bin. And your fact is that this was the first task undertaken by the contestants in their time in the Taskmaster house. And the reason that's interesting is that that is very unusual. We normally set them a warm-up task, which we don't show on the TV. For the first time, however, with this series, we showed it on the TV because we liked it. In fact, it represents a change of policy for Team Taskmaster, because I found it interesting to see how the contestants cope with their very first task. That's interesting, isn't it? The second fact for you today is about the studio task, where they had to draw the Taskmaster's monster. And the fact, or at least half fact, is this. That task was invented not by the Taskmaster, not by the Taskmaster's assistant, not by a grown-up. It was invented by a child, not any old child, because you can't get an old child. Not any child. It was the child of a future Taskmaster contestant. That's your fact. Do with it what you will. Goodbye. See you next week for the final.
Now, we've had lots of emails in. We're going to rattle through these because I think there's some really good ones, actually, some really good questions.
Okay.
Here we go. We've sort of covered this, but we'll see if you've got another angle on it. This is from Chloe in Berlin, another one of our international listeners. Dear Katie, how did it feel to be in the studio with two of the most competitive Taskmaster contestants, Rose and Ed? Thanks.
I mean, I can handle it. It's fine. I didn't care, because I knew that I was going to, I knew that I was going to give you a run for your money. I wasn't just going to sort of keel over and let you all win.
Totally.
So, yeah, I didn't care. I think, if anything, it made me feel more competitive.
Yeah, that's good. So rather than it putting you off, you used it to your advantage. You harnessed some of that energy.
Yeah. I could sense it, but I thought, well, you know, I thought if they want it so badly, then that's fine. They clearly need it.
Hi, Ed. I have a question for Katie and have my fingers firmly crossed it may get answered during the next episode. Well, let's see, Franz. Let's see. Katie, when you were ill during season 9, you were represented by Catherine Ryan and Kerry Godleman during two of the episodes, who obviously did a brilliant job at it. If you had been able to choose any former Taskmaster contestant apart from those two to substitute for you, who would you choose and why? It's a great question.
I think Lolly, because I love her.
Yes.
And either Noel, because I love him, or maybe Bob, because I think he would have had an interesting interpretation of what I was doing. And maybe Tim, probably.
Yeah. Yeah. You never know with Tim. If he's in a cheeky mood, though, he might deliberately run it into the ground, right?
Oh, yeah, sure. But I think that would have been... I think it's probably Tim and Lolly for me.
Yeah, I think you're on similar pages to them, right? So they would have understood what you'd done and knew how to interpret it. Not that Kerry and Catherine didn't. I think, like Franz says, they did a wonderful job.
They did, absolutely. I was very grateful.
We'll finish on this question. Hello, Katie and Ed. This question is for Katie. Which of the characters you have played do you think would do best on Taskmaster?
Oh, that's a really good question, isn't it?
Archie's got his own answer. He says he thinks Carol from Stathlet's Flats would do quite well.
I was literally just thinking that. I think Carol would be... Yeah, I think she would do really well. I don't know how smart she is, so I think... She would have been sort of furious when she wouldn't have understood something, but she would have been so officious and pedantic and aggressive that I think she would have been really, really good. But I also think she's got no imagination. So I think it would have been really good. I feel like there's a program in there somewhere. I mean, Stath doing it is obviously incredible. Yeah.
Well, the full character cast of Stath Let's Flats doing it would be a great series. I'd definitely watch that.
The dream of my life. Wowee.
Thank you so much, Katie. You've been absolutely brilliant. I always get the guests on the Taskmaster podcast to rate their experience on the podcast 1 to 5 points.
It started off as a 4 and it ended a 5.
Oh, that's good. That's what we want. I was worried it was going to go down, but we hit 5 out of 5. That's really going to bump up the average. Thank you so much, Katie.
I love talking about it. You know, I'm so geeky. I could just talk about the show all day. It's much.
It's a lot of fun. People love listening to it as well. And that's whenever you think, oh, I'm going to say something really boring about Taskmaster, this is what people enjoy.
They love the minutiae.
There's
no such thing as a boring thought or words when it comes to Taskmaster.
Exactly.
Thank you, Katie. Goodbye. Lovely to chat to you. Bye-bye.
Well, there we have it. That is episode 9 of the Taskmaster podcast and episode 9 of Taskmaster Series 10, all done and wrapped up. We are so near the end. There is only one more episode. It's all down to the wire. Feels like it's between Daisy and Richard. But Mawaan or Johnny, with one stunning episode, could pull it back. Mawaan has done this in the past. He's had brilliant episodes. Could it be another one? Catherine, it feels like she's there for moral support. I'm sorry, Catherine. I think you've been a brilliant contestant, but I don't think you could win it now. I think it would be a miracle if you did. But miracles have happened in the past. Fingers crossed. So we will find out next week who has won. And my guest next week will be the winner of Taskmaster Series 10. So get your questions in. taskmasterpodcast@gmail.com. Obviously, we are not saying who that is because we do not know yet. So get your questions in. They better be general. Maybe send in an email with a question for each potential winner. And then I will read the actual winner, the question for them, and we will attempt to tackle the other specific questions as well. But the winner will be on next week's episode. Email taskmasterpodcast@gmail.com with your questions. Don't forget to go on to taskmasterstore.com specifically for the brilliant Taskmaster charity download. You can host your own Taskmaster night this festive season. You get your own little Alex Horn assistant on a charity download video. Little Alex Horn, he's on loan from Greg Davis. Thank you, Greg. All the money raised will go to homeless charities across the UK via Homeless Link. You can give a £10 donation. You can give even more than that if you're feeling generous this Christmas. So go on to taskmasterstore.com for more details on that. But apart from that, I think that's all the admin done. Again, we're going to see you next week for the final. The final! It's so exciting. It's been a brilliant series. I can't wait to find out who wins, but I think we all agree they are all winners. That's not true. There's only going to be one, and they're going to be right here chatting to me. Okay, see you next week. Bye!
Greg is so wise and very tall. Alex is fine, not quite as tall. Will there be eggs? I like tossed with eggs. This is the song that plays at the start. Good luck to all the people taking part in Toss today.